are for Medicare for All. They're for the ending of student debt. They're for a UBI to sustain them, especially during during COVID. So these things are very progressive, and the Democrats were against them.
Massive infighting among the party elite is being reported. Older and moderate Democrats blame newly popular progressive causes for the losses. But the Democratic Socialists of America, the left wing of the Democratic Party, won 70% of the races and ballot initiatives they endorsed.
The Democrats really aren't progressive. I would attribute the their losses to putting up bad candidates, candidates that are very centrist. So this is the strategy of the Democrats, is we need to be more centrist or more rightist centrist, and they'll blame progressives.
The election results were widely expected to be a repudiation of so-called Trumpism, but analysts say they actually cemented the unprecedented political uprising unexpectedly led by Donald Trump. So-called Trumpian Republicans are now expected to reshape the conservative party. There seems to be unanimous agreement that regardless of the final outcome of the presidential election, Trump and his family will have increased, not decreased, control over the Republican Party. A pre-election poll asked Republicans and Republican-leaning independents if they considered themselves a supporter of Trump or a supporter of the Republican Party. 60% picked Trump.
Whichever presidential candidate is finally inaugurated, it seems certain that America has undergone a dramatic political shift, which few people predicted and which many are struggling to understand and accept. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Sheikh Zazaki's trial continued in a Kaduna State High Court in northern Nigeria with the presentation of two prosecution witnesses. The two witnesses were officers of the Nigerian Army who made their presentations in court while journalists stay outside.
They gave evidence about the operation of the military operation that lasted between the 12th and the 14th of December 2015, and the role played by each of them. We just want to see how far we can go tomorrow. The prosecution is not likely to close the case tomorrow. So we'll then take other days so that we can speedily, have this matter concluded.
Sheikh Ibrahim Zazaki is being tried for culpable homicide, unlawful assembly, disruption of public peace, among other allegations, which the Islamic movement has described as fabricated and baseless. In December 2015, soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked Zazaki's home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters. No soldier has been charged for the mass murders of Zazaki's supporters, despite the recommendation of a judicial commission of inquiry set up by the Kaduna State government. Sheikh Zazaki has been in detention for close to 5 years in violation of the ruling of a federal high court ordering for his release.
The Nigerian judiciary is a very independent judiciary. So by the grace of Allah, there is going to be a way out for Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, in as much as the Nigerian judiciary remain independent. Definitely there is going to be a way out for Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki through the constitutional means.
Despite being a public trial, no journalist or any member of the Zazaki family has ever been allowed inside the courtroom. Meanwhile, Zazaki supporters have continued to demand for his release in accordance with the order of a federal high court in Abuja. Benjamin Abdullahi, Abuja.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has been projected the winner in the disputed U.S. presidential vote. That means in about 2 months, Donald Trump will have to hand in power to Biden. His administration, however, is using every opportunity to take controversial steps. On Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo paid a visit to an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank to further consolidate Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands.
During the Trump administration, America stands with Israel like never before. Indeed, the commitment we've made, the ironclad commitment we've made to the Jewish state, will continue.
Pompeo said the U.S. will label the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign as anti-Semitic and cancerous. He said Washington will require that imports from Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank be labeled as made in Israel. In 2016, the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution to reaffirm the illegality of Israeli settlements. Referring to Israelis as an occupying power, the resolution called on Israel to stop settlement constructions and abide by its obligations under international law. Later in the day, Mike Pompeo also visited the occupied Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in a 1967 war. President Trump recognized Israel's sovereignty over the region last year. Pompeo's Thursday visits drew the ire of the Palestinians. A spokesman for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas slammed the U.S. labeling move as a violation of international law. Also, senior member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Wasil Abu Youssef, said Pompeo's labeling announcement, quote, reaffirms the partnership between U.S. President Trump and the occupation. Another senior PLO member, Hanan Ashrawi, said Mike Pompeo's visit is aimed at setting another illegal precedent. Pompeo's visits to an Israeli settlement and the occupied Golan Heights were controversial enough. However, they are dwarfed by other anti-Palestinian moves taken by the Trump administration in the past 4 years. Trump announced Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel. Palestinians say the city belongs to them and is the capital of their state. Trump also relocated the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to al-Quds. The American president also showed unprecedented support for Israeli crimes, including bombardment of the Gaza Strip and killing of Palestinians across the occupied territories, setting new precedents in Washington's deep-seated and biased support for the Israeli occupation and crimes against Palestinians.
Millions of businesses across the EU's 27 member states remain closed due to COVID-19. Retail, hospitality, and aviation sectors have been decimated by the pandemic.
People who never were really in the risk of poverty are now really at the risk of poverty. They are now queuing up for food aids.
The European Commission has just published its EU Economic Semester Report 2021, and things are not looking good.
We will have an incomplete and uneven recovery over the coming 2 years, and with persistent uncertainty and multiple risks.
The Commission's report highlights how a debt mountain is growing in the EU, particularly in key nations such as Italy and France. Lobby groups are questioning whether financial support packages already announced will be sufficient.
Is it going to start a new growth for Europe and employment for Europe? We are not sure either. So it's a lot of promise. They have to deliver, because otherwise people will be so disappointed that the trust will completely disappear.
The EU is experiencing its sharpest ever decline in employment due to the pandemic, and things were certainly not perfect even before COVID-19. The European Commission says political leaders across the bloc must take decisive action to prevent social catastrophe.
We need a quick agreement on all elements of EU's 1.82 trillion euros recovery package to support the real economy. People and businesses are waiting.
The EU Commission says 4.1 million temporary jobs have been lost in the bloc. Young adults have been impacted most severely.
Suicide rates in the EU are on the up. Therefore, social rights groups say the need for governments to agree on financial support is not just about the economy. It is, in fact, a matter of life and death. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Coronavirus infections among the general population are rapidly rising in the Gaza Strip, with nearly 500 cases being discovered on a daily basis. On Wednesday, 4 deaths were reported and 600 infections were detected, bringing the number of infections to over 12,000. Hospitals in Gaza, meanwhile, are running low on intensive care units and ventilators, as well as medicines and equipment. During a press conference, the Ministry of Interior in Gaza raised the alarm over the rising number of infections.
The Ministry of Interior may be forced to take some extreme and tough measures, including a full lockdown given the high number of daily infections. Today, the rate of infections has increased more than 20% compared with only 5% during the first weeks of the spread of the deadly virus.
Due to the Israeli blockade, nearly 2 million Gazans are under terrible strain, and their worries over the coronavirus have been heavily compounded.
The rapid rise in the number of infections is frightening. Given the current circumstances, we are praying for a miracle to keep us safe during this deadly pandemic.
The blockade has destroyed our economy, and a full lockdown will be catastrophic. I think a partial lockdown is better so that people can make a living amid the dire economic situation.
The coronavirus spread among the general population has taken its toll on the impoverished coastal sliver. A full lockdown was imposed on the Gaza Strip in late August for a period of 2 weeks after authorities confirmed the first coronavirus cases spread through the community.
During the full lockdown, factories and businesses were completely closed, inflicting a heavy blow on the economic sector of the enclave, which has been battered by the Israeli blockade. All institutions, including civil society organizations, are suffering from lack of funding as poverty and unemployment rates increasing rapidly.
The coronavirus continues to threaten the socio-economic welfare of Palestinians living in Gaza as much as their health.
People here are bracing themselves for the worst as coronavirus infections continue to increase at a fast pace amid the crippling Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
President Donald Trump was on Friday, 20th of November, making a futile but dangerous last stand, without precedent in American history, to overturn the result of the 3rd November presidential election so he can remain in power. Even as Joe Biden's victory in the state of Georgia was confirmed, the president met with Republican leaders from Michigan at the White House in an increasingly desperate bid to subvert democracy after a series of courtroom defeats over allegations of voter fraud. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith. The piece is titled, Trump Makes Futile Last Stand to Overturn Results as Georgia Certifies Biden Win. Stay with us for more of David Smith's article. Donald Trump was on Friday, 20th of November, making a futile but dangerous last stand without precedent in American history to overturn the result of the presidential election on 3rd of November so he can remain in power. Even as Joe Biden's victory in the state of Georgia was confirmed, the president met with Republican leaders from Michigan at the White House in an increasingly desperate bid to subvert democracy. After a series of courtroom defeats over allegations of voter fraud. The Trump campaign's apparent strategy is to persuade Republican-controlled legislatures in Michigan and other battleground states in the Electoral College to set aside the will of the people and to declare Donald Trump the winner, despite officials declaring in the most secure election in American history. The entire election, frankly, in all the swing states should be overturned, and the legislatures should make sure that the electors are selected for Donald Trump, Sidney Powell, one of Trump's lawyers, told the Fox Business Network on Thursday. Michigan state legislative leaders, the Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey, and the House Speaker Lee Chatfield, both Republicans, visited the White House on Friday at Donald Trump's request. Mike Shirkey was greeted by protesters and media at Washington's Reagan International Airport. There were chants of, certify the results, and a shout of, where is the evidence of fraud? However, following the White House meeting, Mike Shirky and Lee Chatfield affirmed their commitment to abide by the electoral process in an apparent blow to Donald Trump's efforts. We have not yet been made aware of any information that would change the outcome of the election in Michigan, and as legislative leaders, we will follow the law and follow the normal process regarding Michigan's electors, the pair said in a joint statement. Michigan's certification process should be a deliberate process free from threats and intimidation. Most experts have dismissed Donald Trump's efforts as political fantasy and probably unlawful. But they warn that an American president trying to reverse a free and fair election could poison millions of minds, conditioning his base to lose faith in democracy and regard Joe Biden as an illegitimate president. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, a former Secretary of State defeated by Donald Trump in the 2016 election, tweeted on Friday, "Protecting one man's ego is not worth damaging the legitimacy of our democracy." Joe Biden, a former vice president, won the election and is preparing to take office on 20th of January. But Donald Trump has refused to concede and is searching for a way to invalidate the results, alleging widespread irregularities without providing any evidence. Speaking in the White House briefing room on Friday about an initiative to lower prescription medicine prices, Donald Trump maintained his baseless claim that he was the true winner of the election. "Big Pharma ran millions of dollars of negative advertisements against me during the campaign, which I won, by the way," he told reporters. "But you know, we'll find that out. Almost 74 million votes. We had Big Pharma against us, we had the media against us, we had big technology against us, we had a lot of dishonesty against us." Joe Biden received nearly 6 million more votes than Donald Trump, but the winner is determined by the Electoral College, where each state's electoral votes, based largely on population, are awarded to the winner of a state's popular vote. Joe Biden leads by 306 electoral votes to Donald Trump's 232, as states work to certify their results at least 6 days before the Electoral College convenes on 14th of December to ratify the vote. The Trump campaign is particularly targeting Michigan, which Joe Biden won by 154,000 votes in the hope that Republicans there will manipulate the electoral system. Both Shirky and Chatfield have previously denied that they might try to overturn Joe Biden's win, noting that Michigan law does not allow the legislature to directly select electors or award them to anyone other than the person who received the most votes. Even so, Michigan's governor, Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, told MSNBC television network, "It's incredibly dangerous that they're even entertaining the conversation. This is an embarrassment for the state of Michigan." Earlier this week, two Republican canvassers blocked the certification of votes in Wayne County, Michigan, where Detroit is located, a major black city. They later relented amid cries of racism, and the results were certified. It then emerged that President Donald Trump made contact with the canvassers, Monica Palmer and William Hartman, on Tuesday to express his gratitude for their support. On Wednesday, Monica Palmer and William Hartman signed affidavits saying they believed the county vote should not be certified after all. But Michigan's Secretary of State said they cannot rescind their votes. Donald Trump's dominance of the Republican Party is such that few prominent Republicans have spoken out against his scorched earth policy. However, Mitt Romney, a senator, a Republican senator from Utah, and the party's 2012 presidential nominee broke ranks on Thursday. Mitt Romney said, having failed to make even a plausible case of widespread fraud or conspiracy before any court of law, the president has now resorted to overt pressure on state and local officials to subvert the will of the people and overturn the result of the election. It is difficult to imagine a worse, more undemocratic action by a sitting American president. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican and Donald Trump supporter, on Friday certified the results that showed Joe Biden won the state by just over 12,600 votes after a manual recount and an audit were conducted. The numbers reflect the verdict of the people, not a decision by the Secretary of State's office or courts of law or of either campaigns, he told reporters. Donald Trump's attempts to reverse his defeat via lawsuits and recounts have met with no meaningful success, yet his campaign has not abandoned its offensive in the courts of law. Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, said in an hour-and-a-half-long press conference on Thursday that there are plans to file more lawsuits. Giuliani accused Democrats of masterminding a national conspiracy to steal the election, referencing China, Cuba, the Clinton Foundation, and billionaire George Soros, and the late Venezuelan president Hugo Chavez, but offering no proof whatsoever. I know crimes and I can smell them, said Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, sweating profusely. You don't have to smell this one, I can prove it to you. He offered no evidence to support his claims. Chris Krebs, the Trump administration election official fired last week by Donald Trump over the comments about the security of the election, tweeted, that press conference was the most dangerous 1 hour 45 minutes of television in American history, and possibly the craziest. Joe Biden, celebrating his 78th birthday, he is the oldest U.S. president-elect in history, met the House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on Friday after spending most of the week with advisors planning his administration, despite the refusal of the Trump administration to cooperate with his team, even over dealings with the coronavirus pandemic.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is part of a speech of Imam Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with clergy and the students of the seminary. You should make plans to realize the results and effects of your work, and you should be serious about reaching your fundamental and basic goal. When you enter the seminary, before anything else, you should plan to reform yourself. While you are in the seminary aligned with your studies, you should refine yourself so that when you leave the seminary and become the leader of a people in a city or district, they may profit from you, they take advice from you, and reform themselves by means of you, of your deeds and manners, and your ethical virtues.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we are with another episode of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. May Allah grant him the peace. We are talking about his viewpoints in this program in regards to the servitude and the theological discussions. According to one of his sayings, he said, if man rises up for carnal passions, which are known as shahawat nafsiyah, and not for God, this action of him will lead to nowhere. This action of him will be futile. Anything that is not for the sake of God cannot last. In this saying, Imam Khomeini is clearly talking about what we have said in the previous episodes, that if your intention is not for the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if it is for your carnal passions, for example, a man rises up for taking a revenge, personal revenge. A man is rising up for just to have entertainment in his life. All these carnal passions, the shahawatu nafsiyya, he does it for himself.
Ya hayyu ya qayyum, ya hayyu ya qayyum.
If he loves someone, that is because he likes to do that, not for the sake of Allah. If he makes friends, it's because of the community, because of the people, so that people can see he has such friends, not for the sake of Allah. If he, for example, helps others and he's making different videos that we see on the social media, for example, on the Instagram or on the Facebook, nowadays we see like people are helping those who are on the streets, those poor or beggars on the street, and then making videos out of them and then spreading it on the social media in order to show that they are the ones who help these needy people. If it is for the sake of Instagram or maybe Facebook, these are all shahawatun nafsiyya, because I want to become popular. This popularity in this world, because I want to be a famous person, these are the shahawatun nafsiyya, carnal passions. And not for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Imam Khomeini says this action of him will lead to nowhere. It's not gonna benefit him. So if you want to benefit from what you have done, do it for the sake of God, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night.
every night and every day. Never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
On the news line.
Bahrain's top diplomats on an official visit to Israel, breaking a long-time taboo. Foreign Minister Abdel Latif al-Zayani landed in Israel on Wednesday. His controversial trip this week marks the first such visit to Israel by any official from the tiny Persian Gulf Kingdom. Al-Zayani's trip coincides with a visit to Israel by America's top diplomat Mike Pompeo. The Bahraini delegation went on to occupy Jerusalem al-Quds. The top Bahraini diplomat sat down for talks with senior Israeli officials, including his counterpart Gabi Ashkenazi and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The U.S. Secretary of State was apparently there to facilitate the controversial rapprochement. Al-Zayani's trip, which has angered the Palestinians, is part of a U.S.-backed push to normalize ties between the two sides.
It is obvious that the Trump administration wants to make sure that the normalization process and the what they used to call the deal of the century will be very crucial and strong before they get away from the power in January. So they are doing marathonian steps so that everything will be on the ground and will be very much clear laid out.
Palestinian groups denounced the trilateral meeting between the U.S., Bahrain, and Israel as a clear attack on the rights of the Palestinian people. The Palestinians want all Arab nations to refrain from establishing ties with Israel until the Israeli occupation is over and a Palestinian state becomes a reality. But as part of the U.S. brokered initiative, Bahrain and its Persian Gulf neighbor, the United Arab Emirates, signed normalization accords with Israel at the White House in mid-September. Sudan has also agreed to normalize ties with Israel as part of a deal that will guarantee much-needed U.S. financial aid. Israel has escalated its violations in the occupied territories over the past years. For instance, it has stepped up settlement construction on occupied lands. The regime has also stepped up demolition of Palestinian homes. So far this year, nearly 700 structures have been razed to the ground across the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem al-Quds. The UN says that number is more than the figure in any full year since 2016. Palestinians have widely blamed the worsening situation on policies pursued by the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump. The American president makes no secret of his extremely pro-Israel stance. Trump took the American support for the regime to a whole new level by moves such as recognizing Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital. Palestinian groups now say the U.S.-backed push to normalize ties between several Arab states and Israel is further emboldening the regime. How can Palestinians now trust the U.S. as it loudly brands itself as a mediator between them and Israel? Palestinians have been fighting an uphill battle against occupation for decades. Things are perhaps tougher today as several Arab states are abandoning the cause and normalizing their ties with Israel. Palestinians say these Arab states are stabbing them in the back. Palestinians know all too well that their options are very limited at the moment. As many governments refuse to pressure the Israeli regime, the people of Palestine are hoping popular grassroots campaigns against Israel will one day change things for the better.
After months of chaos and hundreds of thousands of deaths worldwide, an end to the crisis triggered by the deadly coronavirus pandemic could be within reach. U.S. biotech firm Moderna has announced its experimental vaccine against COVID-19 was 94.5% effective. The announcement would make it the second major breakthrough in worldwide hunt for an effective vaccine. Moderna has announced that its newly developed vaccine would pose no significant side effects.
At the end of this trial, if the efficacy dropped down to 80% or even 70%, this is still really a very good result and a really strong reason to be optimistic to have a vaccine and very soon vaccine.
According to the data provided by the company, its vaccine was given in two doses 28 days apart, and the preliminary results are based on 95 volunteers of the 30,000 who fell ill with COVID-19. Just last week, U.S. drug maker giant Pfizer, along with its German partner BioNTech company, announced the invention of a separate effective vaccine against the deadly virus. According to scientific reports, a key advantage of Moderna's vaccine is that it does not need ultra-cold storage like Pfizer's, making it easier to distribute.
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, these are really good results, although they are interim result, early stages data, but yet these are really exceeding the expectation, because what we expected in the scientific community and also the regulatory bodies were that we will have a coronavirus vaccine around 60 to 70% effective, and this vaccine, both of the vaccine, Moderna and Pfizer results, are more than 90%.
The vaccines are viewed powerful tools to fight a pandemic that has infected 54 million people worldwide and killed 1.3 million. The news also comes at a time when COVID-19 cases are soaring, hitting new records in the United States and pushing some European countries back into lockdowns. Next year, the U.S. government could have easy access to more than 1 billion doses just from the two vaccine makers, more than needed for the country's 330 million residents. Other European nations are expected to have easy access to the vaccines. Head of the World Health Organization has hailed the rapid progress towards a COVID-19 vaccine, but insisted that every country had to reap the benefits from the vaccines. Never in history has vaccine research progressed so quickly. We must apply the same urgency and innovation to ensuring that all countries benefit from this scientific achievement.
And I can announce that we have today secured an initial agreement for 5 million doses of the Moderna vaccine.
Tedros Adhanom has said other countries could not wait for bilateral agreements to get the vaccine, since the process could take years to negotiate. There are now concerns that richer countries could monopolize the distribution of the vaccine. Western nations have already ordered millions of the doses of the vaccine, potentially leaving poorer countries in Africa and Asia without supply for years to come. It's feared relatively wealthy nations will likely be able to vaccinate their entire populations.
The first agreement that we reached with the U.S. government was for an order of $100 million. So we anticipate to be able to ship up to 20 million of those 100 million before the end of the year. So we are making product, as you know, every day and stockpiling it. And assuming we get the green light from the FDA, I would say sometime in December, I'm sure General Perna from Operation Warp Speed will be ready with the trucks to load the product and to distribute it in the U.S. via the CDC guidelines.
The EU has already ordered 200 million doses of Pfizer's vaccine, while the UK has ordered 40 million doses. People in low-income countries could be waiting until 2024. Drug-making companies could also benefit profusely from the world's deadliest pandemic in recent memory. Pfizer and BioNTech could make $13 billion from coronavirus vaccine.
A mega free trade pact came into existence a few days ago. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership has been described as the largest free trade agreement in history. 10 Southeast Asian countries, as well as China, South Korea, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, formed a brand new trading bloc. The agreement was signed on the sidelines of the annual meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations on Sunday, after nearly a decade of negotiations. What makes the RCEP very important is its sheer size, nearly a third of global economy. The world's largest trading bloc has become a reality as the international community is grappling with the devastating economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. It is hoped that RCEP will spur economic recovery from the downturn caused by the virus. Meanwhile, the new agreement, which excludes the United States, is widely viewed as a geopolitical victory for the world's second largest economy, China. Observers believe it will boost China's influence in the region at a time when the U.S. is taking a tough line on its arch economic rival.
I can't emphasize enough how important the free trade agreement is for the reshaping of international political and economic relationships, and this will clearly strengthen China's hand in trying to keep the United States from its somewhat hostile incursions into what the Chinese government considers its territories.
The RCEP is described by some experts as a major win for multilateralism and free trade, despite America's withdrawal from many international agreements. The new free trade agreement is often compared to the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal that U.S. President Donald Trump defiantly tore apart soon after he took office. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has been particularly confrontational in its economic strategy. The White House has implemented protectionist policies like no other U.S. administration. It has taken a tough line on China, blaming it for a large part of America's trade deficit. The U.S. has also engaged in trade conflicts with other major players like the European Union. But Trump's protectionist agenda is not preventing the rest of the world from pursuing free trade at different levels. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership is proof that the world prefers multilateralism.
That will give extraordinary support to the multilateralization of international trade in a way that perhaps is not contemplated in the concept of bipolarity, or even in the notion of globalization as it was being considered in recent years.
Even America's close allies like the EU are engaged in free trade negotiations. Trump's protectionist agenda may eventually backfire, because as a growing number of countries sign free trade deals, American exporters may soon find themselves losing ground to international competitors. But who knows what direction America will take in the future? Trump will probably have to leave the White House in January, and that does not give him enough time to complete his America First project. The projected winner of the U.S. presidential election, Joe Biden, will face many dilemmas exactly because of Trump's controversial policies. Biden's presidency will probably mean a more traditional U.S. role on the world stage. He could bring back America from the brink of a full-blown trade and military conflict with China. But he cannot abruptly do away with Trump's protectionism to join free trade deals. Because right now, many Americans would see any such decision as throwing away U.S. jobs.
Top Iraqi military officials, including Defense Minister Lieutenant General Juma Anatsa bin Khattab, along with the Navy, Air Force, and Air Defense commanders, have visited the Iranian capital Tehran and met with high-ranking officials there. Chairman of the Chiefs of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, said the two sides discussed ways to reinforce defense and military cooperation. while Gharib further noted that during his meeting with the Iraqi defense minister, the two sides exchanged views on issues related to defense industry and security of the two countries' common borders, as well as bilateral cooperation and joint military exercises. The Iranian officials stressed the significance of boosting defense cooperation between the two neighbors, as the United States is after redeploying terrorists in the region.
A resurgence of terrorism in the region will help the United States to maintain its influence and to even infiltrate more than before in the region. And who is milking terrorist groups in the region in order to impose its will, in order to occupy, plunder, and change regimes?
The Iraqi defense chief also held talks with Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, on bilateral, regional, and international developments. Shamkhani said a U.S. objective is to create rifts and conflicts among regional states in West Asia, underlining the need for the regional countries to exercise vigilance against the sinister plot. Khattab, for his part, hailed Tehran's support and assistance for his country in repelling terrorism and stressed expanding bilateral relations, especially in military and security sectors. Calls for the ouster of foreign troops from the Iraqi soil strengthened following the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and deputy head of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, near the Baghdad airport earlier this year. Following the attack, Iraqi lawmakers unanimously approved a bill demanding the withdrawal of all foreign forces from the country. Numerous rallies and protests have also been held across the country since with the same demands. The latest such demonstration was held last week near Baghdad's high-security green zone, where government buildings and foreign missions, including the U.S. Embassy, are located.
By assassinating the Iranian and Iraqi anti-terror heroes who literally liberated Iraq and Syria from the terrorists of ISIS, the United States was fighting against the fight on terrorists. And how could they sell their weapons, warmongers in the United States sell their weapons and maintain their presence?
Washington has so far transferred several Iraqi military bases back to local forces, with senior U.S. military officials saying local forces are increasingly able to counter terrorism on their own. The head of the Pentagon's Central Command said earlier this year that the number of U.S. troops in West Asia, including Iraq and Syria, would most likely be reduced soon. The commander, however, said he expected U.S. and NATO forces to maintain a long-term presence in Iraq to both help what he called fighting terrorism and checking Iranian influence in the country.
People have suffered enough, and in fact, they have demanded the United States presence termination. I think if the Iraqi government believes that they have democracy, that they have a system that can translate public opinion into laws and normatives, they should facilitate what the Iraqi parliament has already ratified.
But what has prompted the United States to reduce its troops in the region? Some experts say Trump wants to deliver his 2016 campaign promise of bringing back American forces from abroad. But others believe that Washington is losing its footprint in West Asia as calls for expelling U.S. forces by regional nations have grown stronger than ever.
Minutes. As everyone now recognizes, media polling was election interference in the truest sense of that word by powerful special interests. These really phony polls, I have to call them phony polls, fake polls, were designed to keep our voters at home, create the illusion of momentum for Mr. Biden, and diminish Republicans' ability to raise funds. They were what's called suppression polls. Everyone knows that now. And it's never been used to the extent that it's been used on this last election.
Who are the mainstream media? CNN, The New York Times, Washington Post, BBC, NBC, NPR, BBC ABC, and Fox News, among dozens of others. For years, it has been claimed that the mainstream media has been influenced by special interest groups and corporations. In fact, according to the U.S.-based Business Insider, six companies including GE, News Corp, Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, and CBS control 90% of the media.
So the story in the New York Times is a total fake. It's a fake newspaper, and they write fake stories.
It should be very clear that this is not in defense of Trump. It's not every day that a president of an economic and military powerhouse comes out and exposes what many have already suspected. Thus, it seems that the mainstream media has been at it for a while, and Trump is the highest level of power that has flagged them. In 2009, when Iran was having its presidential election, and when Mir Hossein Mousavi falsely declared himself winner before official results were given, some of these very same entities that Trump accuses of falsely calling the winner of the 2020 U.S. presidential election also sided with Mir Hossein Mousavi before getting all the facts straight. This, the media began a vilification of Iran while hiring spies to work for them inside of Iran and to instigate tensions there during the elections at least. In this recent U.S. election, networks like BBC congratulated Biden while calling Trump a liar and siding with those networks that do, while back in 2009, it used BBC Persian to explicitly try to create fake news. Sounds familiar?
It's really, I mean, I think I came up with the term. I hope I came up with the term, but it is fake news. It's more than fake news. It's corrupt news. They write stories without calling anybody. They write a story today. I had a couple of stories where they never call me, ever, that I know of. At least nobody tells me. They'll write a story about me without even asking my opinion on something. It's totally fake.
Only in 2009, the target was Iran, but now it's one of their own, Trump. He's accusing them of being a small, powerful few that have large sway on everything you can think of.
People know what's happening, and they see what's happening, and it's before their eyes. And there are many instances which will be reported very shortly. There's tremendous litigation going on, and this is a case where they're trying to steal an election. They're trying to rig an election, and we can't let that happen.
This while the same entity over a decade ago disputed the election in Iran and supported rioters who were unhappy with the outcome. But in Trump's case, the mainstream media is vilifying Trump's supporters and Trump while backing Biden and his team. In Iran's case, the media was targeting the establishment pushing the people over the edge, and the alibi was that Iran was building nuclear weapons, while in Trump's case, it was another American civil war packed by fake news.
Three for you, Nora. Let's start with the first one. The President Trump said it will go away, referring to coronavirus. We're rounding the corner. It's going away. We rate that as false.
American media even countered what it called 20,000 false or misleading claims.
Has now made more than 20,000 misleading or false statements.
Things have got fiery, too. He even left CBS 60 Minutes interview and more.
I think we have enough of an interview here. Okay, that's enough. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go meet for 2 seconds, okay? Thanks. I'll see you later. Thanks.
The president is wrong.
In addition to the lies that Brian just singled out there, and kudos to him for doing so quickly.
Yeah, President Trump here is just being ridiculous.
And partly because Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and the rest of Trump's cronies think it's a good idea to make the election a referendum on corruption.
China doesn't want to.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's a crazy guy jacked up on steroids.
Even Twitter started flagging Trump's posts by labeling Trump's tweets as disputed and unprecedented move towards the person with the highest office in the U.S. What a spectacle. That was the reaction of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The leader said, "One says this is the most fraudulent election in U.S. history. Who says that? The president who is currently in office. His rival says Trump intends to rig the election. This is how U.S. elections and U.S. democracy are." Surprisingly, that tweet wasn't flagged, judging by the U.S. media's hostility towards Iran. Back in 2009, it was the media and the U.S. regime that were hand-in-hand stirring unrest in the Islamic Republic.
Along with the rest of the international community, the United States is closely watching events unfolding in Iran. We are deeply troubled by the reports of violence, arrests, and possible voting irregularities.
But it didn't end there. Just a few days later that year, Iranian security authorities discovered a foreign-linked terrorist plot to plant bombs in mosques and other crowded places in Tehran during the country's June 12 election. Unlike in the U.S. election, as according to claims of fraud and cheating from President Trump, Iran's government in 2009 explicitly stated that there was no fraud.
Fortunately, we have witnessed no major irregularities during the country's recent presidential election, and therefore there is no reason to annul the election.
It didn't stop there. CNN interviewed Reza Pahlavi, the son of deposed Iranian King Mohammad Reza Pahlavi.
First of all, do you believe this was a free and fair election? Absolutely not.
Is there any evidence these protests are actually spreading? And if so, what do you expect the Iranian government will do about it?
So far, they seem to be controlled. It's unlikely that they will become a mass uprising unless the defeated candidate, Mousavi, calls people into the streets.
My own sense is that the vote appears to have been rigged.
Was this a fraud, a cushion for an Ahmadinejad victory, or did they outright steal the election? They just don't know the scale of it yet.
It took what the new website Politico called a buffoon, Donald Trump, to expose interference of mainstream media in the affairs of others. Of course, mainstream media has interfered in the policies of former presidents like Barack Obama and George Bush as well, but no one exposed them as much as Trump did, according to Trump himself. According to Swiss policy research, largely unbeknownst to the general public, executives and top journalists of almost all major U.S. media outlets have long been members of the Influential Council on Foreign Relations, CFR. In a column entitled Ruling Class Journalists, former Washington Post senior editor and ombudsman Richard Harwood described the council and its members approvingly as the nearest thing we have to a ruling establishment in the United States. Perhaps this is why the American public remains largely distrustful of the mass media. According to the most recent Gallup poll, only 9% of Americans currently have a great deal of trust in the mass media. This while 30% say the fair amount of trust in the mainstream media. Whether it is by Western officials or what they consider as their enemies, Western mainstream media has been exposed. They've been exposed at the highest levels for having their own policies that may or may not align with the interests of the people they are representing or targeting.
IRIB English Radio.